A few months ago over dinner, our family got into a discussion about what's our favorite holiday and why. It's one of those happy conversations I'll always treasure for the laughter and the exchange of memories, all the free-flowing joy around the table. In the end, the winner of Best Holiday was really no contest at all, as you might imagine. But I was struck by the reason cited for Christmas being the clear winner, at least in our family. Folks talked about the smells, the crisp winter air, the coziness of getting home to the twinkle of lights on the tree in the afternoon or early evening, reconnecting with far-flung family, the music, all those memories. Surprisingly enough, no one mentioned gifts. But there was something else, too, that wasn't mentioned. Hey there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. In recent years, you may have seen folks on TV or social media reminding us to remember the reason for the season, as that saying goes. And to be honest, I suppose when I've heard someone say that, I felt like they were wagging their finger at me, sort of scolding me for not putting Christ first when it comes to Christmas. Fair enough. But beyond that sentiment, what does that mean? From a practical standpoint, from a spiritual perspective, especially when we're all enjoying our Christmases or reflecting on Christmases past. Carol Imra Farkas is a Christian Science practitioner. She's in the public practice of spiritual healing as taught in Christian Science. In fact, she's also a teacher of Christian Science, and she joins us now from her home in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Imra, welcome back to Sentinel Watch.
Oh, thank you, David. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. You know, in a sense, aren't we really talking about what Christmas really is? I mean, you know, the story of the Nativity, that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I loved your list. Christmas was always very happy time of year for me as a child. And yes, I will say gifts.
Got to get it in there, huh?
Yeah, I suppose so. The vacation from school, the music, being with friends, family.
Sure.
But my favorite part every year would come when there would be this moment, and I thought of it when I was little. I thought of it as the real Christmas, and I never knew when that moment would happen, but it always did, and it might be walking home from a friend's house on a snowy evening and feeling God's love embracing me and everyone. I can remember one year sitting on our porch, and I was hearing the Christmas carol, O Holy Night, playing inside the house, and just recognizing that God's love has always been with us. It's the most real thing there is. So these moments, they were spiritual experiences that had nothing to do with plans, where I was, who was there. It was this deeper sense of what this time of year was really about. And as you said, it's the advent of Christ. Mary Baker Eddy has got a description of Christ as the divine manifestation of God, which comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error.
Just a moment there, Imra, because you've said a lot here.
Yeah, we're going to have to unpack that.
Yeah. Mary Baker Eddy, we should note for listeners who may not be students of Christian Science, she was the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. And she's also the author of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. But what was it she said again? Could you go a little more slowly?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to probably repeat it a couple of times because there's so much in here. Christ is the divine manifestation of God, which comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. She also describes Christ as the Spirit of God. So Christ is how God's truth and love come to humanity. And those moments I had were like a little tiny glimpse of that, that God is always with us, that we are deeply connected to God's love. Mm. So, I mean, I like to say, if you want to know what Christ looks like in action, in human experience, well, look at the life of Christ Jesus.
I want to stop you there because when you said manifestation of God, I think in the popular idea of what Christ is, you think about, say, the baby Jesus, right? That's, after all, a big part of what people have, you know, creches, nativity scenes on there. Many have them in a prominent place in their home this time of year. And I'm wondering, what about the baby Jesus here? How does that fit in to the way that you're describing this notion of Christ?
Well, that Christmas story about the advent of the Christ, which begins with the birth of Jesus, mm-hmm. is the harbinger of all this good news that is to come. The wise men saw the star and the shepherds saw it, and it leads them to the beginning of this Christmas story that tells us about our inseparability from God.
It seems that it's really important to understand this distinction between the person, Jesus, the human, and the Christ as a spiritual idea. Could you say more about that?
Yeah, this is why I was saying, if you want to see what Christ looks like in human experience, you look at the life of Christ Jesus, because mm-hmm. there's this pure example of what God's truth and love coming to humanity looks like. You find it in his sayings about how God is like a loving, caring parent who provides for us, how God is unconditional love, that we should act like our loving Father in heaven, and then all his healing works that proved this understanding of God is true and practical, and that we can experience that love and live from it. So there's Jesus, the man who made this crystal clear to humanity. And then there's the Christ, which is that Spirit of God, that understanding of the presence of God's truth and love that has always been here, always will be here.
Someone was explaining to me the other day that one way of thinking about Christ is thinking of it as God's love, the power, the action, the activity that we're able to recognize. It's not temporary, temporal. It's not encapsulated in human form, but that it is something that is like being able to witness the action of God. And that really sort of brought it to life for me in a very practical way.
Definitely. I mean, in my own experience, Christ appears as this relieving fact that God's love and goodness is real and it's present. And right where a problem may have seemed insolvable, right where there was pain or fear or a sense of hopelessness about things, mm-hmm. suddenly you are able to see that bigger than the problem, truer than the fear or the frustration or the sorrow, is the reality of love as what's really in control, what's really right there, caring and providing, as Jesus said.
Maybe this would be a perfect place to talk about where you have experienced that Christ. Do you have an example of that that you could share with us?
Oh my gosh, I've got lots.
One or two?
Sure. Some years ago, my dad called me and asked me to pray. My father was not a Christian Scientist, but he had been healed of numerous things through Christian Science. Mm-hmm. Well, when he called, he was having the symptoms of a heart attack. Mm. And I was in the middle of reading that week's Bible lesson sermon, which Christian Scientists get to read the sermon that they'll hear on Sunday ahead of time. And I was studying that week's lesson, which was on the topic of love. Mm-hmm. And when the phone rang, I already had a strong sense of the realness of love, that it is a synonym for God, that God's love is the final word. It's our true default. It's reality. So my dad asked me to pray, and he asked me to give him something to do, something to help him feel God's presence. Mm. And I suggested maybe he could make a list of the things that he was grateful for in his life and where they came from. Mm. I assumed this list would be, you know, the things that meant the most to him, and he'd see they all came from God and the goodness of God. And so he'd be able to see the abundance of love must be right there with him. And I very eagerly went back to the Bible lesson to take an even deeper dive into what love is and what love was doing, mm-hmm. right where we both were.
Okay.
And before I'd finished, he called back to say all the symptoms had disappeared.
Wow.
And we never spoke about the list. But years later, after he had passed on, we were cleaning out my parents' house, I found the list. And there were all the wonderful things in his life, his marriage, the birth of a daughter, his granddaughter, the joyful things he'd seen and done. And next to every one, he'd written Christian Science.
Wow. And he was not a Christian Scientist.
He was not, but he recognized that this scientific understanding of the timeless Christ, the ability of God's love to reach us, always there to reveal God's goodness, that was what had made it possible for him to experience all those good things.
Mm. Wow, what a powerful story. That's really profound. And that must have left you feeling some sense of gratitude there for your father's recognition of it.
It was an amazing moment, yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, I don't think I paused to think about Christ or even really the Christian basis of Christmas. Maybe it was in a sense because I felt like all around us, you know, we're seeing commercials about Christmas this and Christmas that. You might see a holiday special and, you know, in it, the main character might, you know, have some sort of revelation that was somehow tied to the story of the nativity, you know, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of seemed to be sort of in the air. Is sort of atmospheric. And I'm wondering, can you relate to that at all? Because, you know, I think that there are a lot of people who probably do feel like, you know, other than the sort of the reminders that we occasionally get, you know, don't forget about the Christ in Christmas, what this is about, that in a way, we bypass that a lot. You know, we just really don't give a lot of attention to it. And, you know, you were describing how you would wait for that moment where it felt like real Christmas, you know, you would feel that. How do we capture that as a practical matter? How do we feel that spiritual presence in our lives, especially in a season like this one?
Well, I loved what you said about those little reminders, you know, because I mentioned the timelessness of Christ. So that sense of God's love, I mean, it's as present and available in May as it is in December.
Of course.
But it does feel a little nearer and dearer to us at Christmas time, because I think you're right. There's this essentially Christian signal, I would call it, about God's love going out, reminders that there can be peace and goodwill to humanity, that these are desirable, they're natural to us, they're our default. And, you know, you could say that signal may get a little hard to hear in all the holiday noise, but you're right, it's there. And when we're lifted up by noticing and embracing the spiritual qualities that truly define us, compassion, kindness, generosity, right, charitableness, we find that in Dickens' Christmas Carol when Scrooge has his conversion, right?
Right.
But
right.
Those are the qualities that open our thought to Christ. And it took me a while to really understand how to best appreciate this time of year and keep that spirit of Christ more consistently. Mm-hmm. As an adult, when I stepped away from church, interestingly, I stopped having those moments and I couldn't understand why. And I found myself annually reinventing the holiday in ways that I thought would be satisfying, that might somehow create that moment. You know, parties and bonfires and gift giving, and it was all nice. But none of my planning produced an experience that ever transcended those material conditions. So, I mean, I didn't realize it, but I'd sent myself on a fool's errand trying to create those perfect moments of what is really spiritual inspiration, right? Of Christ coming to us. And I'd been trying to do it through human strategies, like the right combination of people, the perfect meal. And it wasn't until I returned to the study of Christian Science that I realized, you know, oh my gosh, that spiritual sense of universal, unconditional love, that had been what was at the heart of those real Christmas moments, and they couldn't possibly be created materially because they are essentially spiritual. They didn't come from or start in a material consciousness, right? What Paul called the carnal mind, because that mind resists God by making everything about personality or human history or intellect. They come from what Paul called the mind of Christ, which is the awareness of God's truth and love being expressed right where each one of us is.
You know, I was thinking of what you were sharing, that wonderful story about your father who was experiencing the symptoms of a heart attack and being completely freed, healed of of that. And it was so so deep and profound. And yet, in a way, I thought, well, that's not a Christmas story. I mean, where's the jingle bells and where's the, you know, where's the, you know, the glitter and all that kind of stuff, right? And I'm wondering, maybe I'm not going to try to paraphrase this, but I'm wondering if you could connect the dots for me there, because when I asked you about, you know, a healing that would sort of represent what we were talking about here, that was what came to mind. Could you say more about why?
So I'm going to come back to that quote that we had started unpacking, what the Christ is. Not just the baby in the manger, not what we know historically about the man Jesus, but this divine manifestation of God, which comes to the flesh. And then the last part, to destroy incarnate error. And elsewhere, Mrs. Eddy talks about, this is from miscellaneous writings, she says, in different ages, the divine idea assumes different forms according to humanity's needs. In this age, it assumes more intelligently than ever before the form of Christian healing. This is the babe we are to cherish. This is the babe that twines its loving arms about the neck of omnipotence and calls forth infinite care from his loving heart. And that's certainly what I experienced that day with my dad, you know, doing that deep dive into the nature of God as love, and then seeing it manifest right there in our experience. That's Christmas.
I totally get it. But I want to make sure that I do, because what Mrs. Eddy says there, and that's from Miscellaneous Writings, which is a collection of her poems and other writings. She says, this is the babe we are to cherish. And she's referring to the form of Christian healing. As the babe we are to cherish. Is that your understanding of it?
That is my understanding of it. And so that activity, what was going on when I was studying that Bible lesson sermon and what happened when my dad reached out for help, that was the cherishing of the Christ.
Well, let's cherish that babe a little more, shall we? Maybe you can share another healing with us that you've had that illustrates this, the power of Christ through Christian healing.
All right. I haven't talked with you about the motorcycle, have I?
No, but I'm all ears if it's motorcycles.
Okay. All right. So this is not a Christmas time example, but again, it is that sense of the differentness of life when you connect with the Christ. So when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, we had a very close next door neighbor who used to ride in on his motorcycle around 2 a.m. every Saturday night, and then he would leave it running in the driveway, which was right under our bedroom window. And he would tinker with it, and he would he'd be kind of loud. Well, one of these Saturday evenings, it had been a long day, and 2 a.m. he roared in, and I was feeling extremely grumpy because I hadn't gotten much sleep, and now I was going to have to listen to this motorcycle. And so for a while, I lay there kind of ruminating about, oh, how unfair this is, and how what a thoughtless neighbor. And then another thought got in, which comes from the front page of Science and Health, and it's a quote from Shakespeare, nothing is either good nor bad, but thinking makes it so.
Yeah.
And in the remembrance of that, it occurred to me, I actually had a choice. I didn't have to lay there ruminating and feeling unhappy. I had control of what I was thinking. I could choose not to be all stressed out. And with that, just accepting that that was a possibility, I suddenly found there were lots of other options. I could think about the things I was grateful for. I could think about all the good things that had happened in my life that Christian Science had brought to me. And I lay there for a while, and this sort of expanded. The list got bigger and bigger, and then I realized the motorcycle had been turned off. And the funny thing was, at that point, I didn't even want to go to sleep because these thoughts of how much good there was to be grateful for just kept unfolding. And it was a good thing I didn't go to sleep, because the next thing I knew, the dog had come up and needed to be taken out. And I got up and got dressed and put on her leash, and we walked out in this kind of cold, moonlit night. And I thought, there's nowhere else I'd want to be on earth than right here, because everything was just so God-filled. It was like one of those Christmas moments. And I got the dog back in the house and went back to bed, and then the baby started crying. I went back downstairs and picked her up, and I remember walking around her room in the moonlight and thinking again, there is no place I would rather be than here singing a hymn to my daughter. Because there, again, that sense of love. And she fell back to sleep, and I got her back in her crib, and I went upstairs, and I think I got about 2 hours sleep that night. But the next day was the most joyful day. And I know it was because of that activity of the Christ.
You weren't denied any of your energy or joy because of what had happened the night before.
No, not only did I have all the energy I wanted, but things just seemed to fall into place without any effort on my part. So again, that thought, this is what life is really like. I want to live this way all the time.
So what about next Saturday night? Did you hear the motorcycle roar back in?
You know, honestly, I can't even remember. I don't know if he ever did roar back in. And, you know, for me, this is sort of an example of something that happens in a Christian Science testimony meeting. You know, we have hymns and readings from the Bible, readings from Science and Health on some topic, and then people will stand up and share experiences like these ones I'm sharing with you. What happened when they started from the basis of the presence of God's truth and love? When they started from the mind of Christ. And usually the story begins with a problem. It was difficult. It seemed insurmountable. And then prayer enters in, and you hear about how they prayed, what thoughts they were cherishing, what spiritual qualities they were recognizing as present. And then comes this moment where they talk about realizing that the problem's nothing compared to the presence of God, that God's goodness really is there. And you hear the enthusiasm, you know, the joy in their voices, and they sit down, and then 5 minutes later, they have to stand back up and say, I forgot to say the rash disappeared, or the problem with my boss cleared up, or the resources I was lacking were found. And it just points out how much bigger to all of us this encounter with the Christ is. And sure, we're grateful for those things, but bigger than that is this joy that this is how life really is.
You're just above it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really used to find a little puzzling was how Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science that we've been referencing through this conversation, how she didn't seem to be very sentimental about Christmas, and yet she loved the holiday clearly. She wrote a book called Christ and Christmas, which was illustrated, and it's certainly beloved by many Christian scientists, especially at this time of year. But I was going back and reading the poem that she wrote. And, you know, it's not full of a lot of the, you know, flowery things, common expressions that we associate with Christmas. Instead, it's very, how do I put this, gently powerful. And it has a kind of a strength and a quiet muscularity to it. It begins, "O'er the grim night of chaos shone one lone brave star." So it's vivid, most certainly. But in many respects, it's you know, not flowery or anything like that. And I've always been impressed by the fact that she seemed to be calling us all to notice that star, you know, to pause long enough in whatever it is our human activity might be and think about what that star means. Think about what, I guess, in a metaphoric sense, God is saying to us constantly. And that, to me, seems to get at a big part of the way that Mary Baker Eddy saw Christmas, as a kind of a renewal of that call to action, in a sense.
You know, I was just thinking of my favorite illustration in that book. It looks like a family party. Mm-hmm. And there's the Christmas tree and all these people gathered around having their party. And then in the foreground of this picture is someone who is not enjoying the party. They're in a wheelchair. They look like they're not well. And standing by them is a little girl who has come to comfort them. And you look at that image and you say, okay, where's Christmas in that picture? Is it the tree and the people, you know, lifting their glass of cheer? No, it's there in the foreground in that moment of love being expressed.
The babe we are to cherish.
Exactly.
There may be some folks who are new to Christian Science and wondering about, you know, how Christian scientists go about celebrating Christmas, if there's anything that's particularly distinctive. What would you say makes Christmas distinctive or particularly important in the way that we learn about God and study God through Christian Science?
When our older daughter was very small, we used to get this children's magazine. And one December, the issue described Christmas as celebrating the birth of a baby. And my daughter looked at that and she said, "A very special baby." And that sense of what Jesus taught us, what he did for us, it's all implicit in our understanding of the babe in the manger, that it starts there, but it's a much bigger story. And so for me, that was really another Christmas moment, I think, that recognition of Emmanuel, God with us. And yes, we would have Christmas parties and we gave our children gifts, but again, it was those moments that were truly emblematic of the meaning of this time of year. And I think the whole family knew that. Certainly my daughter knew that. I guess she was 3 or 4 when she made that remark.
You know, for some people, Christmas can be somewhat bittersweet. You know, it does bring back memories and perhaps of a family member that may no longer be around. Sometimes people can feel a little melancholic, I suppose you can say. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's a gift we can share on that front here during our conversation. For them, they may be listening. I want to feel that spirit. I want to feel that real Christmas that they've been talking about there. And yet they may be feeling lonely, or they may be struggling with a health condition that, you know, that they feel is a kind of a sentence. How can they find comfort now, especially now?
Well, let's go back to the idea of the real Christmas moment. I mean, the thing that I think I most loved about those moments, even as a child, was the way it embraced all of us. So sitting on the porch listening to O Holy Night, it wasn't just that it made me feel happy or it was creating a happy childhood memory, but it was a moment of recognizing the universality of God's love, that it included everything that I had ever experienced or would experience. All the people that I loved were there in it. And I find that that quality of that moment is found in every one of these experiences of Christ. No pain, no parting. And yourself as you really are, you know, whole and intact and blessed and blessing. Who we really are, who God made us to be. And there's nothing lacking in that.
What if you don't feel it? How do you deal with that? Sometimes we can feel like we're doing it wrong, you know? That maybe our approach isn't right, or maybe God isn't listening to us, you know?
Well, Mrs. Eddy has given us this wonderful thing on page 115 of Science and Health that helps with this. It's called the Scientific Translation of Mortal Mind. Mortal mind, again, we were talking about Paul and the carnal mind that's in resistance to God. So she breaks down this experience into three degrees. First degree are those thoughts that would say, you can't feel it. You're material and that's all there is. That sickness, that disease, that loss, these things define you. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a thought about what's going on. Kind of like my thought about the motorcycle and my neighbor. I was in the first degree. The second degree is evil beliefs disappearing, and it says in the margin, transitional qualities. And she lists these moral qualities, humanity, honesty, affection, compassion, mm-hmm. hope, faith, meekness, temperance. That as you cherish those, make an effort to express them, recognize the value of them, mm-hmm. and the fact that they are expressions of God, and you are going to take your stand with them, something wonderful starts to happen. So you find yourself in what she has called the third degree, understanding, spiritual. You find yourself with wisdom and purity and spiritual understanding and spiritual power, love, health, and holiness. She says, in the third degree, mortal mind disappears, and man as God's image appears. And I think that that's essentially what happened to me when my dad called me that day, that I happened to be sitting there at that moment cherishing the qualities of love, affection, and compassion, hope, and faith.
And so was your dad, too.
And so was my dad, yeah. So you can be lifted out of that despairing sense just by recognizing the presence of these qualities. And no, you know, you can't see them with your eyes or hold them with your hand or mm-hmm. measure them in a CT scan, but we know goodness is real. We know the difference between what is good and what is not. We know what affection is.
And we can hold to that, and in holding to it, we start to move up that scale that you were describing.
Yeah.
What a gift. What a gift Christian Science is.
It is. It is.
Carol Emra Farkas is a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Emra, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And to you listening to Sentinel Watch right now, wherever you are, the warmest of Christmas greetings from all of us here at Sentinel Watch. In celebration of Christmas, we have a very special gift for you. Make sure to click on the link in our show notes to hear a brand new Christmas song. You just may find it's a new favorite. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noah Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jono Bobo. And we are so grateful for all of them and grateful to have you join us on Sentinel Watch. Talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.